Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by John Rurink. We're going to do another screening room in this edition of MERS Monday. We're also going to talk to the Supreme Court candidate for the Republican Party. His name is James Robert Redford, and he's going to be joining us to talk for about 10 minutes or so. But first, John, let's go through some of these ads that we're seeing now. It's really the post-Labor Day season here, and we're not going to videotape this because I didn't do my hair today, but I thought that we could listen to some of these ads and do some commentary.
Absolutely. We're going to start with one that the Republican Governors Association has kind of had a version of, right? And this is kind of a new upgrade of the one they had. So I'm going to play it. Before I start, though, Kyle, I love these political ads. You know why?
Why?
They get the worst pictures of people ever. I mean, Mark Schauer, he's a runner, good-looking guy. But in this ad, they've got a picture of him. Looks like he hasn't shaved in 3 days, like he's waiting to get hauled off somewhere to jail or prison. But it always amuses me how far they go to find the worst possible picture of these candidates.
Jennifer Granholm signed one of the largest tax increases in Michigan history, thanks to her Senate leader, Mark Schauer. The deciding vote for her painful services tax? Mark Schauer. A newspaper called Schauer her go-to guy in the Senate. Granholm called Schauer a rock star. Rock star? With 300,000 jobs lost and crippling debt? Granholm and Schauer's tax and spend ways left Michigan drowning in debt.
Well, folks still don't know who's running against Rick Snyder.
They don't. And the other interesting thing is, though, I was talking to somebody familiar with the campaign, and they contend that, and I haven't looked at poll numbers, but folks still don't have a good memory of the Granholm administration. She left office, there's always fatigue during a second term, at the end of a second term of a governor. But because of the economic shift we went through, we'd lost so many jobs that I think that was even worse for her. And it's interesting to see what this will actually do to the numbers.
The polling would still show that this election is a referendum on Snyder, whether you think he's done a good job or a bad job. And despite the fact that DGA has put out a lot of ads so far, his voter ID is still fairly low. And so I think that the RGA thinks that they can still frame him within these next 7-8 months and cast him maybe in a negative enough impression that all of a sudden Snyder looks good.
Mm-hmm. They're kind of trying to do what a lot of people have argued, frankly, that the campaigns should have done. The Republican campaign should have done earlier in the year. They should have defined him well before going into the summer, but they didn't. So it'll be interesting to see if it works.
Kind of going from the negative to the positive, the Snyder ad has been running now for a week. Why don't we take a look at that?
Okay.
I'm an accountant and your governor. I found I can help more people when the numbers add up. When Michigan's foundation is solid. Michigan was once the engine that drove America, but we took it for granted. We didn't change with the times, and we let politics get in the way. Not anymore. We're on the road to recovery for every Michigander. You might not feel it yet, but you will soon. We've eliminated $1.5 billion budget deficit. Since I took office, we put $1 billion more into education. Our unemployment rate is the lowest in 6 years, with nearly 300,000 new private sector jobs. The credit never goes to the person who built a strong foundation. But that's what you have to do first. And that's why we have accountants.
Well, this one's really interesting, John. There's a lot of different places you can go with this ad. Obviously, it's 60 seconds, so it's longer than most ads. But let's start with his voice. I mean, it doesn't sound like the regular Kermit the Frog type governor.
It does kind of sound, he does sometimes have a fairly Kermit-like voice, been de-Kermitized. You know, my first reaction to this ad was, it kind of bugged me because of the close-ups. But, as I've watched it a couple of times, it's actually a pretty positive ad. The close-ups are still a little odd. It goes somewhere where I don't think he needed to go about the recovery, where he says, you may not have felt it yet, but you will. I don't think he needed to go there, which kind of raises some questions. But over there, it's a pretty positive ad, a lot of good images.
another Fred Davis special here. And I think that's one of the hallmarks of his, trying to be creative and go outside of the box on a gubernatorial ad or any kind of political ad, the super close-up. And, you know, I think it wouldn't have worked if he didn't sound soft and genuine, but I think he does.
Yeah, he does.
So he's almost in your home as opposed to on the television screen, which is a bit different.
It's his equivalent of the Jennifer Granholm with the cup of coffee on the porch ad.
The angelic music, I don't know if we needed the angelic music.
Oh, I don't know. It was kind of uplifting.
Really?
Yeah.
I kind of felt like the choir of angels were giving me some, you know, their thoughts and endorsement on the ad.
I suppose.
The accountant. Do people have that kind of a positive feel toward accountant? I guess if you stack it up to politician or governor, maybe.
It's better than politician. I don't know if it's better than governor, but I think it's going to probably, if I'm guessing right, and this is just a guess, that the campaign is going to pull in a lot of numbers, that they pass four budgets on time. They've got more money in the bank. That accountant thing, my guess, is going to be a huge part of his fall push.
Let's stay on the governor track here. The DGA just put out a new ad, and this one has caused the Snyder campaign a little more frustration because it hits on this whole education funding issue and whether the state has cut education funding or whether it has raised education funding. And I think we've deduced over the months that it's just basically whatever numbers you want to use.
You could argue it either way. And I remember we were talking about this all the way back, and I think in February, that this race was going to come down to how you define an education cut. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple different ways, obviously, three ways I think we enumerated in an article.
And as you're looking for that ad, I mean, the three ways is if you just take a look at the bulk amount of money that the state puts toward education, you would call it a spending increase for education. If you take a look at the traditional way of how schools are funded, which is a per pupil basis, you could call it a cut. If you take a look at how schools are receiving money from the state, that's kind of the same. It's a little bit of a break-even, and it's not really a big deal one way or the other. But the DGA is going to be pounding on this as a cut because the money could have been going to education. Instead, it went to pay for a business tax cut. Thus, we have this ad.
My name's Kim Stanley. I've been teaching for 25 years. I think education is one of the most important investments we can make. Governor Snyder cut $1 billion from education, but gave his own administration officials huge pay raises. One of them actually makes $330,000 a year. And Rick Snyder's administration gave millions in state contracts to his own cousin. I don't understand how Governor Snyder can think those things are more important than our schools.
Well, I think that's a powerful message. I mean, coming from somebody who's one of us, really.
It's a powerful message. Apparently, looks like an everyday person you'd see in the street or at church, a regular old teacher making the argument. But again, we're going to talk about, you can define those cuts in several different ways. There's a couple things in there, though, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that $330,000 official is, I believe, a Treasury investment person who manages the state's pension funds. You know, I mean, you can make that argument, but to be fair, you know, to protect the pensioners of the state of Michigan, you really want the best market guys you can get in those slots. So to pay them what is a going market rate is not an obscene thing or a bad thing. It's probably actually a good thing for the rank and file retiree.
You know, there was a quick pivot in there, too, because they were talking about how this alleged cut to education was going to fund Snyder's quote-unquote friends in the business sector. Mm-hmm. It was a cut to the business tax for the private sector. It wasn't necessarily for pay raises for the administration. I think that's a separate issue altogether, you know, so you're kind of equating one to the other.
Yep.
And I don't know if that's necessarily fair.
There's one other issue probably with this ad that I would point out, and that's her reference to the contract with his cousin. I think that was originally let under the previous administration, if I recall right. So, yeah. I mean, it's just kind of a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah, Snyder's cousin was great for Granholm, too.
Apparently.
So who would have guessed we'd be talking about Petco when it comes to the U.S. Senate race, John?
I was surprised.
It's not the issue that we were thinking earlier this year that we'd be talking about. And yet Petco has become now the issue du jour here in this U.S. Senate race. Mm-hmm. The first ad we're going to play is from Next Gen Climate. Now, this is the Tom Steyer group that is playing in races across the country, Iowa, New Hampshire, Florida. They've had conference call. They had a conference call last week in which they talked about their strategy and how they're playing in all these different states. And as part of this, one of their biggest ad buys across the country is in this Michigan race in support of Gary Peters against Terry Lynn Land in this ad called Consequences. And let's listen to this ad and then the reaction from the Land campaign trying to take advantage of the same exact issue.
It's Michigan's most polluted zip code, home to one of the dirtiest refineries, near where the billionaire polluter Koch brothers dumped petroleum coke, some of the dirtiest oil waste imaginable, contaminating homes for months. Now they've dumped millions to elect Terry Lynn Land, so she'll let them keep polluting. Instead of selling out to the highest bidder, Terry Lynn Land should come spend a day here, or here, or here, living with the consequences. She's waiting. Next Gen Climate Action Committee is responsible for the content of this advertising.
She's waiting. We don't know who she is. But
no, we don't know who she is.
But she's waiting.
They have some really daunting pictures of the petcoke floating across the river, the dust from those piles.
I like how the name Terry Land is on that boxcar as it's rolling down the tracks. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. Because she's clearly been engaged in this whole scheme to bring these piles of petcoke to the Detroit area. So,
well, and the interesting thing is, too, the Koch brothers have not been involved in this campaign for months now, have they?
Don't believe so.
I mean, early on with Americans for Prosperity, they were, but we've moved on to other sources.
Other funding sources coming in for Terry's campaign.
All right. So, but in reaction, the Terry Land campaign has come back with their own ad, which I don't think is all that bad. Let's listen to the profiting from pollution ad coming from the Terry Land campaign.
Gary Peters' friends are spending millions on attacks trying to falsely connect Terry Lynn Land to petcoke. Peters calls petcoke a dangerous pollutant, but he has $19,000 invested in a company that produces it, hoping to profit from pollution.
Even though I own a little bit of stock in a company, that doesn't stop me from speaking out.
For Washington's Gary Peters, $19,000 is a little bit of stock and a lot of hypocrisy.
I am Terry Lynn Land, and I approve this message.
It's interesting that Terry Land is doing the rebuttal on this as opposed to the senatorial campaign committee for the Republicans or some other outside outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think?
You would think she would use another outfit, a third party to attack him to sort of keep herself separated from the attack. But it's actually, you know, from as far as an attack ad, it's a pretty good attack ad.
$19,000 in the grand scheme of Gary Peters' portfolio, it's not a ton of money. I mean, I think it's like a half a percent of what he's investing.
But you got to remember, though, for the average voter in the state of Michigan, that's a lot of money.
It's interesting that they've been able to turn this petcoke issue around on Gary Peters and maybe neutralize it a little bit. Does this neutralize that first ad?
I think it does, actually. I think it puts it in balance. I think it negates it overall. It's a negative on both sides.
The first one, connecting Terry Land to petcoke, is kind of a stretch in the first place.
It's kind of a stretch.
So the
investment, you know, it kind of takes that and neutralizes that. It links Peters to the same thing. The hypocrisy thing resonates with voters.
So two stretches. Maybe we can talk about something different now. Debates, maybe something?
Debates.
Maybe we can have a debate.
Debate about debates? I don't think we're going to have a debate. Do you think we're going to have a debate?
I don't think there's any incentive for
Snyder to debate. I clearly don't think there's an incentive for Land to debate. I think she's demonstrated in her interactions with the media that I don't think she wants to be one-on-one on stage with.
And you know what? The only people who really care are us.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, the media. We're the only ones who care.
Well, yeah. You, me, Stephen Henderson.
Exactly. I mean, the media, I mean, the people at home, they've got other things they'd rather watch on TV.
Yeah.
The Tigers, maybe the Tigers will make it. Maybe they won't. This playoff hunt has got folks glued in on that. The regular fall shows are coming out now, too. You know, you've got a whole new series of different things coming out right now. I don't need to watch debates.
That being said, it is a shame that there isn't a debate, because there should be.
Yeah, I would agree. All right, well, one thing that we are probably not going to have a debate on, but if we would have a debate on anything, would maybe be Supreme Court. Maybe Tim Scuba can invite the Supreme Court candidates in to talk on Off the Record. We can only hope. One of those candidates is going to be James Robert Redford, and he's joining us this week on the podcast. Joining us this week for the podcast, Judge James Robert Redford, candidate for the State Supreme Court. Your Honor, thanks for joining us on the program.
Kyle, thanks so much for letting me meet with you. Really appreciate it.
So, James Robert Redford, is that on purpose?
Well, you'd have to ask my mom and dad, and they're sainted now. But my father was Robert Carlisle Redford. His dad was Carlisle Redford. And in our family, the boy, the firstborn boy, always gets the middle. His dad's first name is his middle name. So, like, my father was Robert Carlisle because of his dad being Carl. I'm James Robert, and my son happens to be Spencer James. It's just the way we did it. Didn't have any idea that there was some other fellow out there with a similar name, but that's my full name and my wedding invitation, my licenses, and everything else. So
anyway, we're continuing a family tradition, it sounds like, here.
Yes, sir.
And you're not pursuing an acting career. You've decided to get into the judiciary.
I have a face made for radio, so I've decided that acting is probably not best for me. So I thought to the judiciary, it's been a wonderful 12 years that I've served on the Kent bench and the 5 years I served on the military bench. So that's what I'm pursuing now.
Well, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Thanks. I grew up in the city of Detroit in a large family. We had five older sisters and a younger brother. My mom and dad were great, Robert and Catherine Redford. They taught us about the value of service to community, to nation, and to church. They really imbued that in us, and it led my brother and I to serve in the military, each of us for 28 years, and my sisters, three of my sisters are educators. I joined the Navy after law school, well, in law school, actually this past Friday was the 30th anniversary of my being commissioned as a naval officer by my younger brother. I served 28 years as a Navy JAG. I've been a federal prosecutor and a partner in a firm, and I've been a member of the Circuit Court Bench in Kent County for 12 years, almost.
So talk about why you decided to make the jump here to the Supreme Court.
The Supreme Court is, of course, the highest court of our state, and they're called upon to decide important constitutional issues and important statutory issues. And I think that the depth and breadth of the experience that I have lends the ability to fulfill the responsibilities of a justice in an appropriate way. There's an opening because Justice Kavanaugh, because of our state constitution, cannot run again because of age. It would be a great privilege and honor to serve in the same seat that justice served in. He's been a distinguished member of that court for 24 years. There's an opening on the court, and that's why I'm seeking and offering myself up for service.
So what's been your judicial philosophy these last 12 years, and what do you expect to carry with you to the Supreme Court?
I consider myself a rule of law judge who applies the laws and the Constitution as they are plainly written, and I apply the law fairly, evenly, regardless of the claim, regardless of the parties, and regardless of what the facts are. And in that way, to try to give predictability to the people who come before me in the cases that I'm assigned, and to give predictability in the law. And I would hope to do that as well as a member of the state Supreme Court.
How important do you think it is to have judicial experience when running for the Supreme Court? Is it vital as far as you're concerned?
It's up to the voters, of course, to decide what the most critical means of experience are. I think judicial experience helps a lot because as a judicial officer, when you've had the responsibility to oversee cases, when you've had the responsibility to either be appointed or elected, you've gone through the process, you understand how our constitutional system of self-government works and the role of the judiciary. I think it's helpful. There are justices who have served previously who have not had judicial experience. There's currently a justice who was not a judge beforehand. It's up to the voters to decide who they want on the court. I think having the experience as a judge is very helpful, and I think it provides really some critical experience points that can give one the ability to serve well and effectively as a member of that important court.
Now, one of the other candidates who is seeking this position, Court of Appeals Judge Murphy, obviously also from Grand Rapids. Have you had the opportunity to work with him before in the past?
We have. Judge Murphy is a valued friend and colleague. He was kind enough to call me and let me know he was going to be running. He has been an appellate judge for cases that I've decided. We've known each other. The judicial community and the legal community in Grand Rapids and West Michigan generally is a very collegial one. I consider him a good friend and a valued colleague.
Has he ever overturned one of your cases?
You know, I've been on the bench for nearly 12 years. I've had about in excess of 8,000 cases. I suspect he probably has. I know he's upheld me a number of times as well. So I don't keep a balls and strikes count on all the cases. I would guess he probably has, but I'm not sure about that.
So obviously this is one of those races that comes to a lot of name ID, and you're running against another candidate on the Democratic side who has a very popular name, somebody whose family advertises quite a bit during Tiger baseball games in Bernstein. How do you overcome that kind of a name ID differential when you're running for a post like this?
Since January, I've been in 64 of our state's 83 counties. I've done certainly over 100 events, and I've met many thousands of our fellow citizens. So I'm reaching out to try to meet as many folks as I can. We live in one of the most populous states in the Union, 10 million citizens. I can't meet everybody. So one of the things we're trying to do is use electronic media, to use grassroots efforts and friends, as well as a statewide campaign. So I think we're trying to let me introduce myself to as many of our fellow citizens as we can, let them make an informed decision of who they think should best serve on the court.
Tell me about the road to getting one of these nomination spots here on the Republican ticket. Obviously, you got in fairly early, but there was always some chatter about that there might be somebody else getting in. Nobody got in. Do you think that it's a testament to the work that you put in before the before the convention that nobody else really stepped forward and you never really had a challenge?
I'm not sure why I didn't have a challenge. It was a privilege to be nominated without opposition. It was a privilege to meet so many thousands of people, really, in the last 9 months. So I hope that perhaps the breadth and depth of my experience might have made people feel comfortable that I'd be an appropriate nominee, and if elected, an appropriate member of that important court.
So who do you see looking forward into the general election as the person that you really have to beat here? Is it Murphy or Bernstein?
I'm not looking at it, Kyle, in that way. What I'm looking at this race as, I want to communicate and get to know as many people in Michigan as I can. I don't view this as I'm running against one person or another. I view this as I am communicating to our fellow citizens the experiences that I have to offer. 28 years in the United States Navy, 12 years as a circuit court judge, former federal prosecutor, partner in a civil law firm. My experience as a kid growing up in Detroit, important values of hard work that I learned from my family, communicating all those things. And then if the voters decide I'm one of the two people they would like to vote for, I'd be honored to have their vote.
As far as other judges out there, whether they be Supreme Court justices here in the state of Michigan or U.S. Supreme Court judges, is there anybody in particular that you look at and you kind of, I wouldn't say idolize, but kind of pattern yourself after or kind of look up to as you've been progressing as a judge yourself?
Yes. Certainly Chief Justice Young, who is the current Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, is someone I admire greatly. He has a superb intellect. He has a disciplined view of the law. And I think he's a very faithful servant of the law. Justice Markman, I similarly have known since I was a federal prosecutor until today. I find him to be an outstanding justice as well. Justice Merle Corrigan, she had a very similar career path as I did as a former federal prosecutor and then a member of Plunkett and Cooney. We were both at one time or another partners there. And then she's just an outstanding justice. More locally in West Michigan, judges Doug Hillman, who has now passed away, a former federal judge, and Judge Robert Holmes Bell. I've had the benefit of being in front of just some superb judges, and a number of military judges who I had the privilege of serving with as well.
And then one last question I wanted to ask you here. One of the controversies has been whether Supreme Court judges, justices, should be nominated by a political party and whether they should be just appointed or just elected nonpartisan. Do you have a particular point of view on that?
The provision for how our justices are elected and selected and nominated is a creature of our state constitution of 1963. When Michigan first became a state, the Constitution of 1835 provided the justices of the Supreme Court would be appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. That changed in the Constitution of 1850 and again in 1908 and 1963. The Constitution provides that judges shall be elected by the people in a manner in which it is set forth by the legislature. I am comfortable with a process where those who wish to serve the public have to obtain the franchise and obtain the vote of those we seek to serve. So I'm comfortable with the process. I understand there are different viewpoints on how someone should be nominated, and I'm very open to looking at different views and different proposals. But right now, the legislature has determined that this is the manner in which justices will be nominated and then run on the nonpartisan ballot, because we're nonpartisan officers as elected justices or judges. So I'm comfortable with how it is. It's not to suggest that it can't be changed or improved. Before we change it, though, I'd like to see what the model is we're going to.
All right. Very good. Judge James Robert Redford from Kent County, thanks for joining us on the podcast this week.
Kyle, thank you so much. Really a pleasure to be with you. Have a great day.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to James Robert Redford for taking some time to talk with us. And John, I called snack time last week. I don't know if you know about this. And they still have not filled up the snack box.
I think they've gone out of business.
Well, maybe, does that mean we can take our money back? Can I take that 20 then out of the...
I don't know. Have to wait and see. Give it another month.
I'm not going to touch it yet, because the second I take it out is the day that they come roll up.
They're going to show up, yep.
Yeah, they're gonna stock the thing full as it should be. Until now, we're going to see who's the person who's desperate enough to grab that last cheese curl bag. It ain't going to be me.
No, I'm closing tonight. It might be me.
All right, we'll see. Until next week, I'm Kyle Mullen. Take care.